from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I am in such a good mood today because I like drama, especially when it doesn't involve my favorite team. And I especially like drama when it involves the team that Georgia sort of has standing in its way to sort of accomplish what the Dogs came so close to a year ago, which is winning the national championship. Obviously, I'm referring to the Alabama Crimson Tide, and if I do say so in my humble opinion here, there is a mess brewing in Alabama, and I think thus far Georgia seemingly has done a pretty good job of avoiding it. Now, I insert the word seemingly here because critics of the Dogs will say, well, you just wait. It may be getting messy between Tua and Jalen Hurts right now, but it'll be messy with Justin Fields and Jake Fromm eventually. These two quarterbacks can't coincide on the same roster at the same time, and that may eventually be true, but the problems are already starting for Alabama, and so for now, we're just going to enjoy the turmoil there, and we're going to assume that what folks have said thus far about Georgia, they're going to be true to their word, and this will, Georgia will remain a competition, whereas at Alabama, it appears to be veering in the direction of controversy. Let me set up this conversation this way. This week, Kirby Smart was on the Paul Feinbaum show. He was at the Regions Tradition, the PGA Tour Senior event, Champions Tour event that takes place in suburban Birmingham. And on the interview, the subject of his relationship with Nick Saban comes up. And Kirby actually reveals an interesting tidbit of something that he and Nick Saban have talked about already a bit this offseason. And as you might imagine, with the two programs, it involves the quarterbacks. Here is Kirby on the Feinbaum show.
What is the relationship like now?
It's great. We played in the Chick-fil-A Classic a couple weeks ago. He and my partner and then Mark Ingram and him played and got to catch up. He currently has a golf course and a home up where my parents live, so I get to see him over the summer. He's been really great. He was really good at the draft. We got to share some ideas really on his quarterback situation and ours, some similarities.
Did you tell him which one to pick?
Oh, no. I'm talking about more about our situation.
But I'm sure he'll tell you which one to pick.
No question. He had some good pointers. I'll keep those between him.
You know, we would really like to know what he said.
Always looking for good advice, especially dealing with the quarterback situation.
And, of course, the media will tell you that these two situations are seemingly similar. Georgia's got Jake Fromm versus Justin Fields battling out to see who's best. Alabama's got Jalen Hurts battling out with Tua Tagovailoa to also see who's best. But what you would almost have to wonder about here right now, at least based on what we've learned in the last 24 hours, who is Nick Saban to be giving anybody advice about how to handle a quarterback situation? Because it appears to me that Nick Saban may be handling his quarterback situation about as badly as it could be handled. Let me give you the kind of growing controversy here and the rising drama in Tuscaloosa. Let's start in April. Do you remember way back then when Avarian Hurts, the father of Jalen Hurts, spoke to Matt Hayes, the writer for the Bleacher Report, about how he viewed things from Jalen Hurts' perspective? Remember, Hurts had been the starter, was taken out of the game in the national championship, and now apparently there's some hurt feelings, no pun intended, in the Hurts camp. Here's what Avarian Hurts, the father, the dad of Jalen Hurts, told Matt Hayes. My job is to do what's best for Jalen. And make no mistake, Jalen is a quarterback, and he wants to play quarterback. He loves Alabama, loves Coach Saban, and everything about that plays. But he wants to play, and he will play, Hurts says emphatically. And if he doesn't, Matt Hayes asks him, Avarian Hurts goes on to say, well, he'd be the biggest free agent in college football history. That's Avarian Hurts, the father of Jalen Hurts back in April, kind of planting a flag for his own son's perspective of, play me or trade me. Put me in the game, make me the starting quarterback, or I'm going to go be the biggest free agent in college football history. Now, I don't think that's exactly the status that Hurts would truly have, but I understand a dad's going to defend his son here, and a dad's going to stick up for his son. And clearly on the side of the Jalen Hurts camp, they think he ought to be playing. Well, guess what? Tua Tagovailoa's camp, they think the same thing, and the language coming from Tua, frankly, is just as strong, seemingly, as it is coming from Avarian Hurts, Jalen Hurts' dad. Here is what Tua apparently said this week. It was reported this week. I'm assuming the speech came from this week. He's talking to a bunch of middle schoolers back in his home state of Hawaii, and he's sort of telling one of these, hey, you know, coming-of-age tales of how he overcame adversity and how he, you know, toughed it out and did tough things. But in the midst of the speech, he says something that's going to get some attention. Way over in Hawaii is where he speaks it, but over here in SEC country, we noticed it. Tua Tagovailoa says, even throughout my football season, I wasn't the starter. I wanted to leave the school. So I told myself if I didn't play in the last game, which was the national championship game, I would transfer out. If I gave in, I don't think I would have seen the in blessing of where I am now. Well, in blessings aside, and as reported by Hawaii News Now, what Tua Tagovailoa says there is, if I didn't play the national championship game, I was going to bowl, which ironically confirms a statement from Lane Kiffin, who had talked about this a month or two ago. At the time, it seemed like Kiffin may just be trying to stir up trouble, but as it turns out, Kiffin knew what he was talking about. Tua Tagovailoa backs it up, which lets you know that Tua's been saying this to more than just some middle school kids out in Hawaii. He really was leaving if he didn't win the national championship game or play in the national championship game. And you have to wonder if him saying that now is a way of putting a bug in Saban's ear, or kind of a, you know, a notice in Saban's mind of what will happen if he somehow chooses Jalen Hurts, even at the beginning of the season, to be the Alabama quarterback for 2018. Rising drama in Tuscaloosa. But adding to this as well, as a couple of reporters have noted, the role that Taulia Tagovailoa, and I'm sure I'm butchering his first name, it's to his brother, a recent Alabama quarterback commit for the class of 2019. Some are saying that the timeline for Tagovailoa's commitment is also a way of kind of putting a thumb on the scale in this quarterback competition in favor of Tua over Jalen Hurts. Let me start with John Talty here, who's a reporter for AL.com, who tweeted yesterday that it's been clear for a while, but Tua's most recent comments, that's the ones I just read from you, further illustrate that whomever loses the quarterback battle this fall is going to transfer. The smart move that Tagovailoa's made was having Taulia commit, because now it's, listen to this phrase here, it's 2-1. In other words, saying that the Tagovailoa commitment is an attempt at manipulating Nick Saban to choosing Tua over Jalen Hurts, because you get both quarterbacks if you go with Tua right now. It almost makes you feel sorry for Jalen Hurts just a little bit. Well, our colleague and buddy Chris Kirscher from SEC Country responds to that John Talty tweet by adding his own opinion and information. Kirschner says Talia's original plan was to commit after his senior season. Him and the family moving it up most certainly played a part in this situation. In other words, the Tagovailoa family had this quarterback competition in mind when Taulia moved up his own commitment there. That is an amazing level of drama coming from Alabama, and I'm not going to lie to you. I enjoy it. I think it's fun. But I also enjoy the fact that for the moment at least, and I think it's going to last for more than a moment, Georgia's avoiding this. What's happening in Alabama is veering towards controversy. What's happening at Georgia is still just a competition. And you can't help but feel good as a Georgia fan to compare things that Justin Fields has said in the past as a lot less volatile than what Tua told some middle schoolers and what Jalen Hurts' dad told a reporter back in April. Let's go back to last June here for a moment, when Justin Fields, at that point in time, still a high school student and a high school player, talked to Jeff Sintel from Dog Nation. At that point in time, Justin Fields made it known that he'd be okay either playing very little in his freshman season or not even playing at all. Justin Fields last June to Dog Nation said, "I think there's a study where most NFL quarterbacks come after a redshirt freshman year, so playing freshman year is not a big deal to me. Of course, I want to play kind of early, but waiting 1 year and learning the offense and just getting better and gaining that chemistry with my teammates, it will help me. That is not that big of a deal to me." Now, a critic of the Georgia program and maybe a critic of me might say, well, Justin Fields may have said that, but he didn't mean it. There's a chance he didn't mean it. But which side would you rather be on right now? Georgia, where a quarterback has said what Fields just said, or what he said a year ago, or Alabama, where the quarterback Tua Tagovailoa threatens to transfer if he doesn't play in the national championship game and apparently tells everybody about it, so much so that Lane Kiffin heard about it. The better situation right now is Georgia, and I believe there's a specific reason for this. Even though Saban may be giving Kirby advice for how to handle his quarterbacks, I think that Kirby's handling this situation in just a superior manner. He truly is making this a competition, and I truly believe that Kirby Smart will play the guy that he thinks is best and the guy that the players in the practice field know is best. In Alabama during the 2017 season, I'm not sure that was the case. I think there were people back then that already knew that Tua was better, and yet Tua was forced to sit. And I think that situation festered. And I think that's part of the problem that Nick Saban's dealing with right now. One way or another, though, Alabama seems to be growing into a bit of a soap opera here. It's fun for Georgia fans to enjoy because they like seeing Alabama have to squirm here a bit. They also like the fact that that kind of stuff is not happening at UGA, at least for the moment. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us. On video, a lot of ways to check out the show. Dog Nation Facebook page, Dog Nation YouTube page, Dog Nation on Twitter. We air there live at 10 a.m. each and every Monday through Friday. Good to have you with us. On the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We love our friends in the Classic City. And we also like you in podcast form. It's the way the show began, after all. It's our roots. It's where we all got started here. And you can check us out at Apple Podcasts, Android devices, theworldfamousdognation.com. Just get to us somehow, and we'll be here when you do get here. And we're all brought to you by Marco's Pizza. This show would not be possible without my friends there. And Marco's reminds you not to drop the ball when it comes to dinner. Listen, I've been close a few times, and Marco's has stepped in and saved me. The way they do is because Marco's Pizza offers an everyday price of just $7.99 each for two medium, two-topping pizzas. Make the weekend primo and order today from Marco's.com. That is an awesome offer. And I love saving money, and I love good food, and Marco's Pizza gives me a chance to enjoy both. We will enjoy Jeff Sintel here in a moment on Dog Nation Daily. A lot of recruiting stuff to get into with him. I'm going to have to try to cram in a bunch of stuff in here to kind of get it all in. Before we do that, though, I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, I mentioned this yesterday, there is some great programming that takes place this time of year here on the various Dog Nation video channels. It's not just Dog Nation Daily, although obviously I'm proud that you all check in and enjoy our show each and every day. It's also the Jeff Sintel recruiting stuff on Monday and Wednesday nights. It's the Thursday night broadcast from Chip Towers, which ironically is also brought to you by Marco's Pizza. And last night, Chip, on the air, updated us on what I thought was a couple of pretty interesting offseason storylines, things that were either not talking enough about now, we'll talk more about later, or things that may just be sort of simmering below the surface. One of those things, potential bad news, at least from my perspective, the current third-string quarterback at Georgia, the preferred walk-on Stetson Bennett, apparently, as has been mentioned in our comment sections a lot over the last few days, it looks like Bennett's weighing his options and maybe considering leaving UGA. Here's what Chip Towers on the Thursday night broadcast last night said that he knows about that.
Is Stetson Bennett transferring? He's obviously contemplating that. He's discussed that with Kirby Smart, according to several published reports and some of our own intel, Jeff Sintel and I. That's not a small thing. You know, a lot of people shrug that off. Third-string quarterback, big deal. You know, we have Jake Fromm and Justin Fields. That's what people are going to say. But, you know, three quarterbacks is the minimum that you need.
As you know, Stetson Bennett drew rave reviews for his work as the scout team quarterback a year ago. I'm going to ask Jeff Sintel coming up in a couple of minutes if there's anything that Georgia can do to get Stetson Bennett to stay. I think it'll be an interesting thing for Jeff Sintel to weigh in on. Speaking of weighing in, Chip Towers also weighed in on the Tremel Walthour situation. As you know, a 2018 signee, a defensive tackle, but a player whose status is uncertain as a sort of contributing member of Georgia's 2018 team. There's some misinformation and maybe some misunderstanding of the situation with Walthour, and Chip Towers also updated that.
The bottom line is Walthour can't grayshirt, okay? That terminology has been misused from the outset on this whole thing. I've been guilty of it. I parroted, you know, what some other reports were early on using the term grayshirt. You can't grayshirt once you've signed a letter of intent. Walthour signed a letter of intent in February. A grayshirt is when you are asked to hold off on signing anything until you pay your own way a semester or two, and then they put you on scholarship after that. So that's not an option for Walthour. I don't know if he's planning on going JUCO or prep or what. Probably may have a trip back down there to Liberty County to try to catch up with him on all this, but ultimately we'll see the end of May, May 31st.
Yeah, I won't pretend to be an expert on the definitions of gray shirting and blue shirting and anything like that. It's nice that Chip Towers sort of provides that explanation and update. The one thing that you do take from what Chip says there, though, is it is by far not decided yet, or at least, you know, not known yet, if Walthour is indeed coming in as a member of this 2018 class right now. It sounds like that status is still very much up in the air. Good reporting on that from Chip Towers. And then finally from Chip, a bit of a response to our topic on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza yesterday, the possibility that Jake Fromm's a Heisman contender. Chip seems to also think that could be a possibility.
What happens when you do what Georgia did last year, or Clemson did, or Oklahoma did, when you make college football playoff, there's only four teams, you get a lot of attention. It's not that players necessarily become better. More people notice your players. So I would imagine there is, you know, Heisman hopes for a few people. I mean, don't count out DeAndre Swift and don't count out some of these other guys for national awards. Look at Andrew Thomas, who was a freshman All-American this past year. You know, there's a lot of people, and that comes with the territory.
Yeah, so interesting stuff there from Chip Towers, and I do agree with that. That national attention that comes from being a playoff team a year ago in the top four this season gives you a real chance to to get your players in conversation. Kirby Smart talked about that last year with guys like Lorenzo Carter and Roquan Smith, who ultimately used that attention to win the Butkus Award. That attention that comes your way just gives you a bit of more of a springboard towards those national awards. It was good stuff from Chip Towers last night on his Thursday night broadcast. You can check that out every Thursday night on the Dog Nation video channels, and it's also brought to you by Marco's Pizza. All right, I was going to do a little UJ baseball talk right here, and I was going to do our Kroger click list checklist. Let's do that later on in the show instead, because I don't want to shortchange that. Instead, let's get ready to shift gears here now and cram a whole bunch of UJ recruiting talk into as much time as we can here. We are about to pepper Jeff with a bunch of questions. Hope you enjoy it. We're glad you're with us as Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, rolls on right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I love when our voice guy says wherever the recruiting trail may lead, because nobody, you know, beats it up and down the path more than Jeff Sintel, who has been in the Sunshine State for I reckon about the last 3 or 4 days here. He hung out with Derek Rambo Hunter. We'll talk about that. He was in IMG Academy in Bradenton last night for the spring game, and no doubt there is some juicy stuff coming out of that conversation with a lot of these big-time recruits. Jeff, I got a lot to do, but I guess I will say at least good morning to you, and I hope that you enjoyed your time at IMG last night.
I got to see a unique spring game format where somehow the defense gives up 50 points and they still beat the offense. And I think it's some relic of the Butch Jones era. I'm not sure if they got champions of the spring game life trophy after the game or not, but it was interesting to say the least.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. You had some good stuff with Nolan Smith on that subject, and I'm sure that one of the things you'll be writing about over the course of the next few days is, you know, what Trey Sanders had to say while you're down there. That's obviously a running back that's been, you know, something of a priority for Georgia. But you did, and don't think I didn't notice this, you dropped into a Sintel Intel this week at DogNation.com, and you also mentioned this, I believe it's on your Wednesday night Facebook Live broadcast, that all of a sudden, you know, Georgia and John Emery seem to be sort of moving back into the same orbit once again. Georgia coach is visiting him for his spring game. He's obviously an elite running back from Louisiana. Is Georgia fighting a battle on two fronts here with both Sanders and Emery? Does the emergence of Emery mean less emphasis on Trey Sanders? How about these two big-time 2019 running backs and what Georgia's maybe trying to do with both right now?
Okay, Brandon, I'm going to, since you started off like that and you don't want any pleasantries on a Friday, I'm going to see if I can link together as many successive statements as I can, which will cause you to blow your mind, Yosemite Sam style, smoke coming out of your ears. Number one, about the Owen Papo question, Nolan Smith told me, toss-up. Number two, John Emery, Trey Saunders, and Noah Cain are all still being very heavily recruited by Georgia's Del McGee. Del McGee has told them who he wants and who he's recruiting, and they're actually, if they get the right two, Brandon, this is kind of mind-blowing. Georgia would take both Trey Sanders and Noah Cain,
right,
John Emery Jr. and Trey Sanders.
You better
believe
it. Any
combination of those three.
You better believe it.
So you want to talk long shot odds. How about signing the nation's number one in 2018, the nation's number three in 2018, the nation's number four in 2017, and then coming back and getting the nation's number one and three or the number one and four in 2019. Those are things only Del McGee does.
Yeah, listen, Del McGee is earning every dollar he makes as a very big-time position coach and recruiter. You love the idea of Georgia being the mix. You just mentioned three really good ones, Kane and his high school teammate Sanders, and John Emery, who I like from Louisiana. You love the idea of taking two of those three and being the mix for all three right now. That's really exciting. And since you mentioned Nolan Smith on Owen Papo, I'll take the bait on that as well. And look, maybe I've got my facts slightly wrong on this, you can tell me, but why isn't Nolan Smith more instrumental in the Papo recruitment? It seems like when we hear Nolan talk out loud, he's talking about Andrew Booth or others. At least based on what I seem to see publicly, it almost seems like Papo and Nolan kind of travel in different circles here. Am I off base on saying that Nolan's not one of those key recruiters in Papo's decision? You obviously know a lot, both those guys, certainly a lot better than I do. I mean, what is the relationship between Nolan and Owen actually like?
Those guys go back a ways. He does want to play with him, vice versa. But I'm going to just tell you what I heard. And Brendan, I know you don't get into Game of Thrones, but Nolan Smith digs Game of Thrones. I like to watch the Game of Thrones. This is not like a veggie pizza thing, man. You should probably try Game of Thrones.
No, I've seen Game of Thrones. This is the one piece of intel you don't have correct. I've actually seen Game of Thrones. I've seen everything but the most recent season.
Well, you need to watch the most recent season. But no, I'm going to use this parallel. Nolan compared Owen Papo's decision to the Game of Thrones. And he says, man, when he just committed publicly to Auburn, we're just getting started. The ball just got teed off. He said, this is like the season two of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
We got so much stuff to go. The young wolf's still alive. He says, we're just getting started with Owen Papo. And Nolan kind of told me something very interesting. I know this is really forward thinking. But he said, I think you know, Brent, I think I've told you this, that a lot of the 2019 guys have this humongous group chat.
Yeah.
It was sort of like the Savage 17 group chat before, except this probably includes like 45, 50 players and some selected adults as well. Well, those guys are basically planning. You know, Derek Rambeau said he would be there. Derek Rambeau Hunter said he would be there already. Nolan would be there already. They're already talking about taking their official visits to Georgia together. And when you look down the road to the Georgia season, there are going to be some marquee home games this year. There's going to be Tennessee. There's going to be Auburn. There's going to be even Georgia Tech at the end of things. A lot of those recruits are already establishing the fact that they want to take the official visit to Georgia together in very late November, be it the Auburn game in mid-November or the Georgia Tech game later that month.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Jeff. That's a pretty nice thing to sort of think ahead to. Let me go away from the 2019 class just for a moment. Let's play armchair GM for a moment, if you don't mind. If I were to say, hey, I'm not going to recruit a 2019 quarterback, I'm going to offer a scholarship to Stetson Bennett instead, would that be enough to get him to stay, and would that be a good decision on Georgia's part?
Wow, that's a good question, Brandon. I'm going to say that I'm not sure. I'm not sure that that hasn't already happened yet. But I'm also going to say that, man, Stetson, it's almost different because I think the Stetson situation, Brandon, I want you to think about this for a second. He did so well scout team-wise work against the nation's, one of the nation's top defenses. It was the number one defense in the country for quite some time. And yes, maybe it's scout team where the offense knows what the defense is running and how to attack it. But that's also Stetson Bennett with a lot of guys that were Georgia's fourth and fifth team options at receiver, not the marquee guys. And Stetson fared and held up very well against that all season. You've heard that from all the former players. Well, that sort of thing just kind of buries a seed in the young man that he can do it, and he can do it at a high level on the college atmosphere. And it's almost a situation where he knows he's a player. He wants to play. You know, you hear that old adage a lot, players want to play.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the chance for him to do that might be somewhere else. And everybody knows the handwriting on the wall with Jake Fromm and Justin Fields. I thought it was very curious. And I walked away. One of my big takeaways from the of many from G-Day is because – Stetson Bennett didn't get more of a shot to show the fans and to show the crowd exactly what he could do.
Yeah.
That, to me, that kind of translated to me as I don't think Stetson Bennett is ever going to have a shot at Georgia because I think if he wouldn't have gotten on the field and for an extended session, that he would have fared very well, especially in a one-game format. I know there's a lot of up-and-down opinions out there about Stetson Bennett. For me, he's about 6 feet. He's about 185 pounds. I don't know if a young man like that can hold up in the rigors of the SEC for a long time, just because he doesn't have that big suit of armor necessary to take the pounding and to play after he's gotten shelled a couple of times in the second and third quarter and be back and be ready to go for the fourth quarter. But I do see Stetson Bennett, very elusive, very accurate arm, throws the deep ball very, very well. I do see him, maybe if he wants it, thinking he wants to play 4 years of college football rather than have a University of Georgia degree on the wall.
Fair enough. That's certainly a reasonable viewpoint for him to share. On Tuesday, when you were on the show, you kind of explained the Wanya Moore situation. You said, hey, I think it means there are a couple of other offensive tackles Georgia really wants, and we've obviously since then been speculating who that would be. I think Xavier Truss, one of the more obvious names. That's a guy you've written about a lot. But you also wrote at least a little bit this week about Darnell Wright, a guy that I think of as more of a lean other places than a UGA. How realistic is that Georgia could get in with the big offensive tackle Darnell Wright?
I think they're in there with it, Brandon. I just don't know how deep they're in there with it. I mean, there's a difference. There's different hierarchies, I guess, right now to look at recruiting right now. Those are the guys where Georgia is maybe in the top four, top five. There are guys where maybe Georgia's in the top two or top three. And then there's top one or top two. And I think Darnell Wright's kind of looking at Georgia amongst a handful of about three or four elite schools. I know you see what Alabama's trying to do. They're trying to corner the market the way Dale McGee does running backs with the offensive line this year. Their attachments to Clay Webb, Pierce Quick, they got Amari Kite. I think that what would close out Alabama's class, which would also close out a lot of all O-line classes, is they're still trying to get Darnell Wright as well. I think Georgia, it's very interesting to me, Brandon. Like I've said, sometimes follow the visits and follow the follows. Well, you should also kind of follow the offers a lot, too. And Georgia hasn't really went too deep in on offensive tackle. I think they've stayed around 18 to 22 guys over the last 2 months. And that, to me, kind of indicates that Georgia feels good about certain guys, and they don't need to keep going down the list just yet.
There is a lot of online chatter right now about the so-called scavenger hunt in Athens this weekend, kind of a creative recruiting idea. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that is? And more importantly, there are some big names allegedly on hand to take part in this. What can you kind of reveal about this upcoming recruiting weekend for UGA?
Yeah, it's funny, Brandon. A lot of those guys don't even know the full aspect of what's to come. I think the veil of secrecy is there for a reason. My understanding of what's going to happen is it's going to be a typical scavenger hunt across campus. It's going to be a way for them to see all that the University of Georgia and its campus has to offer. It's going to track them through different parts of campus. So the prospective student athletes will walk away from that trip feeling like that Georgia is a full campus. There's lots of academic resources. There's lots of, cool things to see. It's just a way for those recruits to see more than the football field, the weight room, the football facility, and the locker room where they try on all their jerseys.
And the thought here is we're talking about really big names, right? I mean, you look at the forum at forum.dognation.com, they're buzzing with some of who these names are. It seems like there's a pretty extensive A-list type list growing, right?
Yeah, Brandon, I would say that the real true guys Georgia wants to get in on or are already on will be there. And I would also look for a lot of those names to pop out that would be some very passionate stakeholder commitments for Georgia that are already in the fold. So they want to mix guys that are already highly committed to Georgia with a lot of guys that are taking a good long look at it.
Speaking of visits, when you wrote about Derek Rambo Hunter the other day, and that's obviously quickly becoming one of the more interesting recruits for the 2019 cycle, regardless of which school you cover here. But there was a word that you used to describe his visit to Georgia for a G-Day that was at least a little bit concerning to me as a Georgia fan. You called it rushed. And the reason why rushed bothers me a little bit here in the context of Hunter, this is the only visit he's taken to Georgia. And if we're going to follow that follow the visits mantra in terms of, how things are progressing, where a guy's going, I know that Hunter's a bit of an unpredictable, unorthodox recruit in a lot of ways. But I guess it does give me a little bit of concern that he's taken multiple visits to places like Florida. Forget even what he said about Alabama here recently. But it's the multiple visits to Florida compared to just a, quote, rushed visit to UGA. That somewhat truncated visit schedule to UGA, does that give you any kind of pause here if you're a Georgia fan about how deep that relationship can truly be if he wasn't able to sort of, take a deep breath and enjoy the Athens campus too much?
Well, he did love it, Brandon. He did love the visit. And I think the thing there to remember.
He
with
also
Derek
loves
Rambo.
A lot of things.
Yeah, he does. And I tried to explain that to it because everybody associates him with visit love, and wherever he goes, he falls in love with, and that's the new favorite. Well, I think he's reached a new level of his recruiting where he's not going to name favorites. He's not going to gush about a lot of schools. But, Brandon, that's just kind of his nature. I know his backstory pretty well now, and he lost his mother at a very young age, and his father has came into his life and performed, major, major supportive tasks and been there for him ever since. But he's a guy that it's almost like, Brandon, if I go over to your house and we hang out at a dinner party, I'm not going to sit there and talk about, you know, how nice Mike Johnson's house is and how much better stuff Mike Johnson has than you and all those national championship claim trophies and everything else. He just has that way of, you know, appreciation, because he deeply is thankful for all these offers he's gotten. And he feels like when a recruiting reporter calls him from a Florida or a Clemson and they want to know about the visit, he feels like he has to pay tribute to the honor of having the ability to play there by saying very nice things about the school. And, you know, maybe sometimes it comes off as not very genuine because he says that about almost every school, but I just get a sense that that's how he is. He's a pleaser. He wants to leave a good impression of himself in the minds of other people. He doesn't want to let people down. And the thing about Derek, to answer your question, is well, you look at him and he absolutely adored Georgia without visiting the school, and then took a rushed visit and still adores Georgia after visiting the school. He speaks in no uncertain terms about how hard Nolan Smith recruits him and how much he would want to play with Nolan Smith at the next level. And he also speaks, you know, I kind of asked him, because I kind of get where he's at right now, and he's like, he's going to say no favorites. He's going to watch his words a little bit because maybe he's been coached up to do that a little bit better now. But one of the things that Rambo did say is I asked him to compare and contrast what he sees at Georgia and Florida. And he mentioned, you know, and that was sort of a way that he could kind of balance out his thoughts by saying nice things about everybody. And he said that Florida, for some reason, he thinks that Florida has an academic edge over the University of Georgia. So, you know, Florida's a great school, but I'm sure that's something that the recruiters on staff at Georgia will try to make sure that he sees a lot of the stats and he sees a lot of the facts and figures. I think Rambo wants to go into business or even communications, but probably part of that rushed visit is that maybe Georgia's academic muscle didn't get to get flexed in front of Hunter's eyes for him to absorb while he was there. And but then when he talks about the University of Georgia, he mentioned two things. He mentioned facilities and his relationship with the coaches, not just a position coach, but his relationship with all the coaches, what they've accomplished, and how they've developed their players. I do think that when I was there on Wednesday, I believe, at his school, an Alabama recruiter was there watching him work out. And those guys have ties when that member of the Tide staff was on the Miami staff. Remember, Derek Hunter was committed to Miami for a time. And you can look at his Twitter account. I think I dropped that in the intel the other day, is where Nick Saban gave him a personal evaluation of his film. And nobody had broke his game down quite like that. And now, even though Alabama wasn't even in his top eight, they're on the outside looking in or probably have a very good shot of cracking that top eight and getting way up there after he visits them and says wonderful things about Alabama. So with all that, I think it shows that Georgia was in very early on a prospect that Derek Hunter was told that the Tide staff saw his film and wondered, why in the blue blazes are we not on this kid harder than we are right now?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. All right, let's move into the rapid fire section of our conversation here. Antonio Alfano sounds like he is set to make his commitment announcement, and it sounds like Georgia's no better than the bronze medalist here for Alfano services. Is that fair to say that this ship is going to sail with Alfano probably in the Alabama direction here?
Probably. Might be silver medal in the end, but Penn State's also got a big pull for him there as well. But there's a lot of, I don't know, whether we need a, you know, since I'm in South Florida, a ship sailing segment. And I think that Antonio Alfano's ship is sailing away from Athens. I think that Jalen McCullough's ship has been sailing away from Athens for quite some time. Maybe a Harry Miller out there is kind of sailing away as well. You know, there's a lot of guys that, you know, I tried to say on the forum that, man, I don't do crystal balls. I don't do predictions. Basically, the thing to realize there is if I'm writing about a player a lot, then that's maybe somebody the fans should maybe be interested in or think about or hope for. Because I don't just try to chase a lot of stories just to help my post count and get my clicks up.
So real quickly here on this subject, I mean, how would you compare Alfano to some of these other defensive ends, like, you know, like a Hunter who we just mentioned, you know, Brian Brazee, who you got some great quotes from at a Dog Nation, Norton, the current 2019 Georgia commit. I mean, how does Alfano compare to these kinds of players in your mind?
Well, it's kind of the vogue guy, the new template, the new prototype they're looking for. They want a big kid that's explosive. with lots of size. It's already around 280 in high school, whether that's on the edge or in the middle. They like a big, powerful player that plays with a high motor and a lot of aggression. I got to see Derek Hunter on the practice field, and it was very interesting how he moved, especially out on the edges when he's probably about 6'4 and a half and about 280. He's destined to play a three technique on Saturdays, but he really moves very well. You see him coming out of the stance. He looks like an athlete the way he just fires off the ball. Now, of course, he's not Nolan Smith like a ninja coming around the edge, but, you know, Bill Norton, Brian Brzee, all these guys are
really
talented.
Did I say it wrong again? Did I say it wrong again?
Yeah, Brandon, you did. That's all right.
By the time he's walking on senior night, hopefully I'll have Brzee's name correctly.
Yeah, Brzee. There you go. Not the Italian like Lucas Brasi, but like right. Brasi.
Right, right.
So I think those are just a new wave model for Georgia defensive linemen. They like guys that are maybe playing the edge in high school that will kind of shift down and play the inside, which will make them elite inside players. The defensive line spot, I think there will be two positions or three positions that Georgia will recruit as well as any in the country while they are there. And it sounds funny because on my list, probably quarterback would be fourth, which sounds very hard to say, but that's only because you can really put one of those dudes on the field at one time. You would see the defensive line, you would see running backs, and you would see the offensive line. I think that's going to be the bread and butter with all the elite guys in the Georgia football program. And all these depth chart craziness stories, I think a lot of those are going to come from those three major emphases of the ball.
All right, my last question. You're going to be mad at me for even asking this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Josh Belk is leaving Clemson. That's a former big-time defensive tackle prospect. There is no chance Georgia gets involved here, correct?
Well, if it's really about distance, then, you know, Athens is 3 hours away. I think Clemson is 2 hours and a half away. The closest school there might be Will Muschamp and those Carolina Gamecocks, because that's only about an hour away from home. I think that's a situation where there's an issue with a member of his family and declining health, and he needs to be closer to home to kind of support that family member. I don't know. Interesting wrinkle there. I don't know if whether the family might be moving, which would throw all that geography out of whack a little bit. But that's something where I know Georgia would love to keep adding in the defensive tackle spot. And Belk is a guy that held himself up very well. Was a kind of a big time early enrollee at Clemson in their class, and that's one last player they have for their class of 2018 as well. But I would not indicate right now that Belk would end up at Georgia, as much as Brandon Adams would like to hear that.
Anything else I should have asked you that I didn't?
Yeah, you should ask me. Is he moving to the Atlanta area, Jeff?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Is Georgia? No, I mean, Brandon, it's going to be a big weekend for recruits. You're going to see we wrote about this earlier this week on the site, where it's different how Georgia is going to be able – remember, they can take they can take official visits through the last Sunday, I believe, in June. That's different. They're going to be hosting similar events like that. Once the spring evaluation, you know, spring camp, spring practice evaluation period, once the kind of door kind of shuts on that in the next 5 or 6 days or so, then the staff will focus in on those on-campus visits, those Kirby Smart camps, those unofficial visit weekends like this weekend. And then a very different thing for everyone, though, is in the month of June and July, from June 25th to July 24th, that's a dead period where there's no face-to-face contact between players and prospective athletes and their families until, I believe, July the 24th. And then by that time, everybody will be in full operation mode for the 2018 season and fall camp. I think it's designed to give even hardworking recruiting coaching staff like the one at the University of Georgia something that's called a vacation. I don't really – I may have to Google that term, but a vacation. That's what it's meant to be, where you unplug from all this stuff for a while.
Well, eventually, Jeff, we hope you get to take one of those too. But for now, thanks for being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We will talk to you soon, sir.
All right, guys. Have a great Friday.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff from Jeff Sintel there. Like I said, I had to kind of try to cram a bunch of recruiting stuff into the time allotted for Mr. Sintel. And as usual, we go way over on that. But there's a lot going on right now and some pretty interesting stuff potentially bubbling up to the surface here. Let me respond real quickly, though, before we begin our SEC through on something that Jeff did talk about the preferred walk-on Stetson Bennett, who was the scout team quarterback a year ago, and, you know, the notion of him potentially transferring and, you know, scholarship offers, opportunities of playing time. The conversation during the comment section on that, I was monitoring that while Jeff was on, was really pretty interesting from people on both sides who was like, hey, he's our guy, we got to try to find a way to keep him, and other people who value the scholarship. And listen, it's no disrespect to Bennett to say that scholarship is important. I agree with that. You know, in college football, the things that are limited by rule, you have to be very careful how you use them. Scholarships are the number one thing that's sort of limited by rule. You can't just be sort of willy-nilly passing out these scholarships. That's what got Mark Richt in trouble. You got to be careful how you do that. Georgia does want another scholarship quarterback. It's recruiting quarterbacks to the class of 2019. I think what my opinion is, and there's a chance I'm just wrong about this, but I think my opinion here is, not a strongly held opinion, but a slightly held opinion, if I could get a quarterback like, say, Ryan Helinski to flip from South Carolina, I'd probably rather have him than Stetson Bennett. But if I can't get him and it's just some random three-star guy, then I guess I'd probably rather have the preferred walk-on who has already been seen performing well at Georgia practice. Because whatever Bennett faced at Georgia practice is a whole heck of a lot tougher than what any of these other kids have faced at a high school or all-star season or 7-on-7 or anything else. So if I can shoot the moon for a Helinski, which for the 2019 class is about as good as it gets for right now, then that's what I'd rather do. If it's just some, like, you know, three-star guy out of a box, then I guess at that point in time, I'd probably rather have Stetson Bennett, but certainly your mileage may vary. All right, SEC through here now. Let's go to a Bet Online, which this week has published its over-under totals for all of college football. We may at some point in time get into some of the national stuff on this, but for the most part, you care about the SEC stuff, and in particular, you care about the Georgia Bulldogs. How about the number? We'll show you the overall numbers here from Bet Online. How about Georgia at 10.5? That's a massive, massive total. This is only regular season wins, and you can either bet the over on this, Georgia gets 11 or more, the under, Georgia loses 10, I should say wins 10 or fewer, and so that's kind of how the sports books make their money on this. But Georgia joins Alabama at 10.5. You've got Auburn at 8.5. You've got a collection of 7.5 teams, Florida, Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Texas A&M, and then LSU down there with Missouri and Tennessee at 6.5. Not every SEC team is listed here, of course, but kind of an interesting group of opinions. I said on SEC Country Live yesterday, I think that Florida and Tennessee both go under. I think that 7.5 is too much for Florida. I think that 6.5 is too much for Tennessee. I don't think either of those teams are very good here for 2018 because of that. I think that South Carolina actually goes over its 7.5 number. I also think Texas A&M can be better than the 7.5 that's listed there. And if I had to say for Georgia at 10.5, I believe I would go over on that. I think that Georgia's got a strong chance for an 11-1 regular season. It's kind of funny that, you know, even within these numbers, there's what they call juice, a little bit of extra juice on Alabama going over the 11 compared to Georgia. But for the most part, Georgia and Alabama play almost the same schedule. You know, Georgia's two toughest games, Auburn and LSU, arguably the two toughest games Alabama plays here as well. So they'll both kind of take advantage of the same kind of stuff here. Both Alabama and Georgia get Auburn at home, for instance. So I think that the sports book here showing Georgia some confidence and some respect, I think that may be actually well earned here. I gave you drama off the top of the show involving the Alabama quarterback situation. Let me give you another interesting piece of drama here involving Alabama, almost a carbon copy, seemingly, of what happened in 2016. Brandon Kennedy, a player that I'll admit I don't know a ton about, is a graduate transfer offensive lineman from Alabama, and he wants to go somewhere else. And a couple of the places he's at least considered are Auburn and Tennessee. And Bama, much like with Maurice Smith before the 2016 season, is trying to prevent Kennedy from transferring to one of the rivals. Teams, by the way, that would play Alabama here this season. There is some thought around college football that graduate transfer ought to be able to go anywhere he wants to go. Nick Saban talks about free agents in the SEC. Is that what we really want? I mean, my issue on this has been the same forever. I think the transfers, for the most part, should be unrestricted, even if they're undergraduate transfers. But for a graduate transfer, almost for sure, it is unseemly to think that Nick Saban will try to block a graduate transfer from going where he wants. And I hope that other SEC teams use this against Saban as a form of a negative recruiting. And we'll make that your SEC through. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. In just a moment, we're going to do our Kroger Click List checklist. We're going to check in on Georgia baseball from last night. I'm even going to let you hear from Jason Jacobs, one of the analysts on the game for the SEC Network Plus last night, after the Dogs drop a heartbreaker. Before I get to that, though, let me remind you, during this portion of the show, we always do our Dog Day Q&A here during the offseason. It's a chance for you to weigh in on your opinion. We'll look forward to taking your comments. Today's Dog Day Q&A question, going back to the over-under total as set by Bet Online, do you think Georgia's going to win at least 11 regular season games? Weigh in on that. YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook. We'll take your comments coming up in a moment as a part of our Dog Day Q&A. For now, though, as I didn't mention, it was a rough night for Georgia last night. The Diamond Dogs there on the diamond, so to speak, as Georgia has a disastrous, was it seventh inning? You give up six runs in the seventh inning last night. There's a wild pitch. There's a pass ball. And Georgia, after having a big lead over a very good team in Arkansas in the first game of that crucial series at Foley Field, sees the lead slip away and kind of falls apart. Jason Jacobs, the SEC Network analyst who worked with our buddy Matt Stewart there at Foley Field last night, tried his best to describe on the SEC Network what happened to the Dogs.
They kind of took advantage of some miscues by Georgia and were able to keep the pressure on and continue to score and really ultimately ended up being the difference in the game, that ability to really take advantage of a weak spot in Georgia.
So a weak spot emerges for Georgia. Dogs drop that game. We'll play today and tomorrow. I'll give you an update on these times here in just a moment. But for the people who are not completely initiated into the story with the Diamond Dogs here, this is a huge series for Georgia. Georgia can get into, I think mathematically still alive, if it wins both these next two, into the top four of the SEC tournament, which provides a bye, and into the top eight of national seeds, which gives you a chance to host a regional and a super regional. So there's a lot to play for Georgia this weekend, and you just hate to give away a game that I think a lot of Dog fans thought was probably going to be a win. Speaking of that, let's look at the schedule for this weekend for everything else going on with UGA Athletics as a part of our Kroger Click List checklist. Y'all know that I love the Kroger Click List, the most convenient way to buy groceries. And on the Kroger Click List checklist for today and this weekend, some busy stuff going on. Baseball against Arkansas the next 2 days. The game time for today has been moved up. It was supposed to be a night game because of some impending weather there, threatening weather in Athens. It's now a 3 p.m. start for the game today at Foley Field against Arkansas. So set your watches and clocks and phones and stuff for 3 p.m. for Georgia baseball. And then it's noon on Saturday. No game time change there on that. And by the way, on Saturday at noon, that game's actually on the big SEC Network. So some TV coverage for Georgia baseball this weekend. You got Georgia women's golf in the NCAA championships. That starts today. And Georgia softball hosting its regional. I believe the Dogs play the Crimson of Harvard, I believe, starting in the NCAA regional today. So some busy, good stuff going on there. It's our Kroger Click List checklist. It's brought to you by Kroger. And when you're getting ready for graduation parties, I want you to think about Kroger because the celebration is beginning with custom party platters starting at just $19.99. You can order online at Kroger.com or see a deli associate for details. Orders must be placed 24 hours in advance. So start planning today for your graduation celebrations. Check out Kroger.com for a whole lot more. All right. Let me dive into our comments here on the comment section, and it's good to have you with us. Billy Cloud says, where can we watch the Diamond Dogs baseball game? So you've got SEC Network Plus for the game today, and you've got the regular SEC Network for the game on Saturday. Alvin Todd mentioned the fact that it is Harvard that the softball team plays today. That's a 2:30 p.m. start, and I'm assuming you got SEC Network Plus coverage on that as well. Joe Moore also weighing in on the Carolina team that I just mentioned as a possible, you know, over-under. I think they go over that total for this upcoming season. He says he's worried about that South Carolina game as a potential stumbling block to an 11-win season for Georgia. It's kind of interesting to note that the FPI data, also from ESPN, actually makes Missouri Georgia's third toughest game instead of South Carolina. It's LSU and Auburn, as you'd expect. Missouri, the third toughest game. We talked about the Missouri game a little earlier this week here on Dog Nation Daily. On Facebook, Will Go Dog says, heck yeah, we're going to win 11 more games. We're going to go undefeated. I love Will checking in on that. Thanks so much. Appreciate that. Let me hop over here to YouTube here for a moment. Well, I got just a little bit of time on these comments. Actually, I'm not going to be able to make this in time. So we're on video. We're going to keep our comment section going here. A little shorter on our Dog Day Q&A question for today. If you listen to the show on podcast form or on radio form, we do some comments on the video section every single day that you can weigh in on. And if you want to have your voice heard, you can always reach out to me at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter. We'll give you a chance to do just that. For now, though, we'll have to wrap up our broadcast, and we'll do it in style the way we always do, because on this program we believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost, and 162 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Florida in Jacksonville for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We think the Dogs beat the Gators again. We think it's going to be an ugly season for Florida, and we tell you about it every day as part of our Gator Hater Countdown right here on Dog Nation Daily. And I will also say this as we get ready to go. I didn't have time to mention this to Jeff Sintel today, but he had a pretty interesting tidbit. Some of y'all may have already known this and remember this in the past. I did not. That, you know, right now Shiloh Sanders, Deion Sanders' son, is heavily considering Georgia here. Pretty impressive defensive back recruit for the 2019 class. Well, Jeff let us know that way back when Deion originally chose Florida State, became maybe the greatest defensive back of all time, his second choice was Vince Dooley in Georgia. I didn't know that. That's pretty interesting stuff from Jeff Sintel. We'll see you Monday, everybody.